B-Pod Studios.
It's my favorite podcast every year. It's Matt Taven. It's the Ring of Honor world champion who threw out the first pitch at Fenway Park last night. Matt, what was that experience like?
How do I sum up throwing the first pitch at Fenway Park after being a lifelong sports fan? But like, I have a vivid memory of being pulled out. You know, I grew up in New Hampshire, so we don't have the marathon day off like they do down here. So I have a vivid memory of being pulled out of like first grade to go to that game as a kid, and like going to a game every year. And then all of a sudden you get the call that you're going to throw out the first pitch at Fenway. And you're trying not to be nervous about it, but every friend in the world is texting you and telling you, you know, throw it in the stands, get on SportsCenter, do this and that. You're like, I just want to get it over the plate. But incredible. Like, I just, sometimes you don't get to really enjoy the fruits of your labor, but like someone said to me, you know, and they announced it walking out to the mound, it's like, you've won the world title at Madison Square Garden, and now you're throwing out the first pitch at Fenway Park. Like, how could I be down about anything?
And you did everything right. You did it from the top of the mound, mm-hmm. and you threw a strike.
You know what?
All while wearing your world championship.
I was a little bit concerned about my hip rotation with the belt on. I didn't get the stride I wanted. But, you know, the rumor is the ball's juiced this year, right? So I wasn't going to put it fastball right down the plate. You know, I had to work the corner of the plate. I dropped it in for a nice little strike there. And with the way the Sox season's going, I might get a call back. You know what I mean? You might see that number 69 coming out of the bullpen.
They did. The Red Sox did have a little Taven dust there because they got out to a 5-0 lead.
Great
right
start.
Off the bat.
Great start. I mean, only to make everyone sweat it out at the end. But, you know, man, it's such a double-edged sword this year because I like all the runs. At the same time, the games seem so much longer.
They are.
It's insane.
The average game is like 3 hours and 10 minutes now. And when we were growing up, it was closer to like 2:30.
I mean, it would be like a little in and out game, and then you'd go out and like, you know, go and go to a restaurant. Now it's like we got to go home and go to bed.
Yeah,
you know?
It's. I want to know how you got the Red Sox to give you number 69. That number I thought was taboo in all sports except football because it's a lineman's number.
So I did not think that was going to get that number. I obviously have you know, a little cheap little plug. I'll put it in now. On my Pro Wrestling Tees store, I have the baseball jersey, Taven, number 69, you know, representing sexual Taven. And so when they asked me what number, it was the only one I wanted to have. I was like, I could, you know, make this serious and, you know, be a number that I used to have or whatever. But it's like, no one would get that reference. If I come out there with a giant Taven 69 jersey, like that's fantastic. So last minute though, the night before, they were like, give me a backup number. So I was like, oh, I'm not going to get it. And then they handed me the jersey in the locker room and I just see Taven with the biggest, you know, top of the 6 and top of the 9. I started dying laughing.
That's
I was
awesome.
Like, I'm about to walk out in Fenway Park with a 69 jersey on, like, you know, all my friends and family have been hitting me up all day and they're going to tune in or, you know, see the videos on the internet to me wearing this. Like, how ridiculous. But that's just something that Matt Taven would do.
You say ridiculous. I say awesome.
I say money, straight money.
And as we're talking about numbers, this is day 101 of Matt Taven as the official Ring of Honor champion. But, you know, my bias would tell you that you've been the real world champion for 381 days because mm-hmm. you actually won a four-way match against Dalton Castle, the then champion, Jay Lethal, something named Cody, on June 30th last year. So your march to 645, which is the record that Samoa Joe has for longest reigning Ring of Honor champion, is a lot further along than I think people are giving you credit for.
You know, that's why I love coming here, because you get it. You know what I mean? You get it. And as far as I'm concerned, I completely agree. I saw a statistic the other day that was like, I haven't been pinned in singles competition in over a year, which is just insanity to me. At the same time, it's what I've been preaching for so long, is that if you give me the opportunity, I am going to succeed, you know. And it's something that I continue to preach. And I mean, my title reign speaks for itself. Look at anyone else's title reign and just take the 101 days that the Melvins in Ring of Honor have officially named me or consider me the Ring of Honor world champion. and the amount of title defenses I've had in those 100 days, and it's ridiculous. You know, Flip Gordon, PCO, Mark Haskins, Tracy Williams, Jeff Cobb. I mean, the list goes on and on, and now Jay Lethal, again, in Jay Lethal's backyard, of course. That's the only way Ring of Honor would do it.
Criminal.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Criminal. But at the same time, you know, I put my title reign against anyone else's so far. Like, look at the matches, you know. Especially that Mark Haskins match, PCO, Tracy Williams, Flip, Deny or Defy alone, and I was one of the only champions ever to win that. So it speaks for itself. You know, a lot of people want to keep their heads in the sand but have their fingers on the keyboards. I say, you know, actually watch the product, and you're going to see how big of a Melvin you actually sound like.
Oh, and I do. I am a Day One Honor Club member.
See, again, you get it. I'm not preaching. This is the people that have five followers but want to say something nasty on like a video of me throwing out the first pitch, like a real moment in time, and they want to, you know, say something. I hope that makes you feel better. It really doesn't do anything to me. You know,
I hate criticizing the product because I want to like everything.
And that's the thing, is that like
I watch wrestling, Matt, to have fun.
Of course.
And to enjoy myself. And yeah, it's not a perfect product. No company is perfect, but I know that everybody's going for excellence, and that's kind of what I'm going for. I'm going to have fun and see excellence. And there's a lot of good wrestling out there if you just open your eyes to it.
Of course. And then, like, people have started becoming fans, or like thinking that they're fans of the business and not just of wrestling. Like, We're all doing this, and it's all just entertainment to enjoy and to bring joy into our lives. And it feels like everyone is looking for the next thing to complain about. And I guess maybe that's just a microcosm of society, with things like Yelp and, you know, just everyone thinking that they have a voice online. At the same time, it's like, are we ruining things? You know, are we taking it to the point where people are just looking for stuff to tear down, and then it's like we're taking away our own enjoyment? It seems so counterproductive. I just don't understand it.
So this is what I will tell you, being the producer for Felger and Maz 2-6 on the Sports Hub, is the negativity card draws, but there has to be some sort of counterbalance and fairness and objectiveness for it to draw long term, because eventually your act is going to get old.
Yeah.
And or you have to be so negative that it's entertaining and people are like, okay, they're winking at me at this point about it, so I'm just going to enjoy it as entertainment.
And it's funny because like everything done in wrestling is to invoke an emotion, and you're getting people to invoke in these emotions and they don't even realize it, and they're taking it to the point where it's like, dummy, you're getting worked right now. Like, I don't know. Sometimes you just want to wake people up, but what can you do? You can't save the world in one day. I just threw out the first pitch. You know, I'm gonna solve, I don't know, world hunger next, and then I'll figure out the troll problem after that.
Well, you mentioned Honor Club, and I'm a Day One Honor Club guy.
Thank you.
I love the service. The live events are broadcast. They bring the full broadcast crew out.
Yes.
They're live event matches. And on Saturday night, this Saturday night, you'll be fighting Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor Championship. That is a television taping.
Mm-hmm.
But what Honor Club is doing now is they are going to let members watch the TV taping.
Yes.
Live. Which is something that they're doing for the first time. So if you're an Honor Club member, you'd have to wait until the TV comes out on the stream, and then, you know, on NESN here in Boston, where it is locally, Rhode Island. I don't know what station is on Rhode Island, but Rhode Island is the number one market in the Ring of Honor circle of TV markets. But on Saturday night, you're fighting Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor Championship. I don't understand why this is in New York. And I mentioned earlier, it's a crime. You should be having this match in Lowell on Sunday night.
It's about time.
Because it is your home turf. You're the world champion.
Thank you.
You've been the real world champion for 381 days.
Amen.
You've been the acknowledged world champion for 101 days.
Keep it coming.
Why can't you get a home field match against Jay Lethal? Why does it have to be on his home turf? Why? I don't understand this.
You know, I mean,
And especially, New York's a dump, right? New York, I'm not a big fan of New York. The New York fans are so terrible. They chanted profanity at you at Madison Square Garden.
It was
profanity. Those filthy mouth New Yorkers.
Why
does this guy get this opportunity on his home field?
I was going to say, you know, I made a lot of money putting the words Kingdom Conspiracy on a t-shirt, but it was 110% real and seems to be true even as being the Ring of Honor World Champion. I've already defeated Jay Lethal, and what is his backyard? You know what I mean? All you have to do is listen to Jay Lethal's own words, and he talks about taking the train into Madison Square and how it means so much to him, and then he lost. Congratulations, Jay. I am the Ring of Honor World Champion. You need to deal with it. And don't get me wrong. I'm 100% a wrestling traditionalist, a purist. Ugh. in the sense of a champion gets his rematch, right? I'm all for it. But why is it taking place in Jay Lethal's backyard again when I've already defeated him there? And the very next day's in Lowell, Massachusetts. I mean, we better put those Kingdom Conspiracy t-shirts back on the shelf because it's more true than ever right now.
And for those who forget, you were supposed to fight Dalton Castle
right there in Lowell.
In Lowell, Massachusetts, on your home turf. And Dalton faked an injury.
You know
it
I mean?
Seems because
he, had like
he was healthy
hair.
Enough to do a four-way later on when, oh, who was in the match? Jay Lethal.
And who actually won that match?
Matt Taven did.
You know what? You're good. Jason, you're good. I don't know if anyone gives you enough credit, but my goodness. Pat yourself on the back. There it is. Barry Horowitz style.
So Sunday night, I predict... before we get there, I want to say that not all New York area fans are terrible. There are some good ones.
Just the majority of them.
There are, most of them are, but there is a group of fans who I think are based out of New York. They are the Honor Club girls.
Oh, they're all over. You know what I mean? I don't consider them just, you know, New Yorkers, but those girls, they're the best. You know what I mean? They get it. They're at every show, or they try to at least make, and they're like all over the country, so like different pockets of them will show up, which is awesome. But, what immediately brings me back, or what makes me think of New York fans especially, is, you know, Madison Square Garden, Bobby Cruz is standing in the ring, and he says, from Boston, Massachusetts, and
boo.
Woo, it rained.
Except for the people I was sitting with.
It rained booze down. And like the jealousy of, you know, being from the best area. And don't get me wrong. Every winter, I'm like, I got to move south. But then summer and spring comes to Boston, and there's no better city, honestly, in the world. I love Boston in the summer. It's fantastic. But, I mean, it's just the jealousy of how great our sports teams, obviously, have been, and including Matt Taven, you know, as far as winning championships, that those New York fans just can't handle it.
I know.
So it'll be fun to go back this Saturday. But then the very next night, you know, I get to come home. So it's all good.
So I want to back up to Madison Square Garden. And one of the nicest things that anybody has ever done for me is invite me to a wrestling show. And I didn't know what was going to happen that day.
Yeah.
I was a nervous wreck.
You and me both. I had no idea.
Not
either.
As nervous as you were, according to an industry source. So Madison Square Garden, it was the Ring of Honor G1 show. Madison Square Garden, it's a ladder match between Jay Lethal, Marty the Melvin, and Matt Taven. Walk me through your day.
You know, and just real quick, thinking about it, I was probably more nervous last night throwing out the first pitch because no one gives you a warm-up pitch, nothing. You know what I mean? I haven't picked up a baseball in God knows when. So, but anyway, you know, the day was so hectic and there was so much going on that I really didn't have a chance to kind of get too nervous, which I guess was a good thing. And thank God you were able to like go out there before the show, because like I walked in there originally and looked up at the ceiling and saw the lights, and within a couple of minutes they were testing like my screens, like my Carrytron there, and I'm seeing all of a sudden Madison Square Garden turns purple, and I'm like, "Woo, this is something right now." So that took my breath away for a second, and luckily, you know, I kind of like, all right, now let's do this. And there was a lot of moving pieces, and with such a big production, such a short period of time, you know, we only had the one day in MSG to get everything done. So, you know, they're trying to do rehearsals and stuff, and I have a live piano, and just it gets cut last minute, the rehearsal for it. So, like, I'm stressing out, running around, making sure this guy's in the right position, you know, the piano's in the right position, all this stuff. And next thing you know, I'm walking out in front of a sold-out Madison Square Garden. And it's one of those things that, like, you get so kind of anxious for and amped up for, and then when it's happening, it almost like you're not living in it. It's like you're living in a dream. And afterwards, it's still kind of, to me, like watching a movie almost. You know, it's hard to kind of put yourself still in that moment. But there's one moment in particular that always kind of pops into my head as soon as I get asked about MSG or think about it. And it's that shot at the very end when I'm on top of the ladder, and you know, the big screens are obviously showing you the live feed, but inside those screens are monitors back at the ring, so I can see what's going on. And all of a sudden, I just see my face with a big Cheshire grin from ear to ear, and it's, you know, big banner that says Madison Square Garden, and that picture alone is, like, burned into my head of, like, that's the memory that I'll always kind of take in. And man, that smile on my face, that's as real as it gets, you know, those boos and the disappointment. But at the same time, I could hear a steady, you know, Taven fan contingent, no matter what the internet might tell you.
We were sitting in the suite.
But it's funny because, like, you know, my trainer, the guy who's the assistant to Spike when I was coming up, Ryan Waters, he was sitting in the crowd. And he, like, came, you know, later was talking to me. He's like, what are people talking about? I was in MSG. That, when you won the belt, it was like a crazy reaction. And it's just one of those things that's so funny. It's like, if you were there, you know it. Even if you watch it, you know it. But that it goes to the negativity that you see people put out there. And they like to spin things in a certain way. But, man, those boos put a smile on my face that is captured in that moment. And that is just, that's pure bliss right there on Matt Taven's face. And that's, you know, it's a lot of years, a lot of bumps, a lot of, you know, two knee surgeries, man, a million setbacks along the way. And for that moment, that no one can ever take away from me, it's all worth it. You know,
you mentioned the fans, and we mentioned the Honor Club girls, but I think one of the things that I noticed was you did a 60-minute time limit draw with Jay Lethal before the MSG show. And my wonder is, the fan reaction to that match, do you think that that's what propelled you to get into the main event of Madison Square Garden in the ladder match?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that match made me the, you know, a main event star, you know, period. And I honestly, you know, like, they had the mid-year vote for, like, match of the year. And as much as I like the ladder match in MSG, that match in the 60-minute draw in Vegas is the match of the year to me. You know what I mean? It's probably my favorite match ever. You know, and I dare anyone to go back there and really say anything negative and not feel stupid afterwards, because 55-minute mark, those people are going crazy all the way until the final bell. It's like, man, if you knew the adrenaline pumping through someone at that point, like, I did my dive outside the ring at 55 minutes, and it's like, I've been wrestling for 55 minutes, and I just, springs in my legs, just dove out of the ring like it was nothing, back in, bang, and it's like, if you only knew what it took to get to that point to be able to do that at that point, it's like, you know, you're sitting at home with your weird underbeard eating your candy bar or whatever you might do, and like, I've worked
dark chocolate pretzels, that's what I was eating.
And I've worked my ass off, and for that moment, I didn't just, you know, sit on my phone and give my opinion. But it's
I
funny.
Waited until the next day and then gave my opinion on the phone.
It's always those
I
people.
I texted you my opinion.
See,
actually,
you're an accomplished guy, you know what I mean? You go out there and you do your thing. You're the number one sports show in Boston, you know what I mean? And it's like, these people that have accomplished nothing in their lives have no idea what that is, that work to get to that moment. So that crowd in Vegas was on fire. That match is fantastic. I dare anyone to go back and watch it now and tell me it's not the best match of the year. But to me, I was more nervous for that match than I was MSG, because I knew, like, I had to kill it that night. MSG was around the corner. There was nothing set in stone of what was going to happen in MSG. And I said to myself, like, if I shit the bed tonight, forget MSG. Like, you know what I mean? Why would they give me that if I shit the bed at the anniversary show? And so I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I'm very proud of that match. And Jay Lethal, man, he brings out the best in me. There's something about it. We've been wrestling for what seems like forever, but it's always it never seems like the same old thing. It's like, man, if we're in cages, we're in time limit draws, we're in ladder matches, and it's always this fresh rivalry.
It's always quality is what it is. It's always quality.
So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, this son of a bitch again for Saturday. At the same time, it's like, ooh, this is my rival. You know what I mean? Like, we're obviously Boston guys. Like, yeah. This is my Yankees, you know? This is my Lakers. So it's something that I always get pumped up and get up for, and I'm really looking forward to Saturday. And to me, it's like the celebration happens the next night, you know, it back in Lowell. So it's going to be one hell of a weekend.
And I watched that match with Lethal, the 16-minute draw, and my admitted bias, and I'm into every near fall. I'm like, this is how Taven gets into Madison Square Garden. He's got to beat the champion, the big show before it. And that's how he's going to get into Madison Square Garden. And as we're I didn't even realize that you guys had been wrestling approaching 60 minutes. Mm. And that's how good the match was, I think, is when you get lost in it.
Yeah.
You're not clock watching. You're not doing any of that stuff. And then it went to a draw, and I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, that was such a performance. How do you not put him in the match?
And I think that's exactly what happened.
That's how I felt. Yeah. Like, and I felt like if you weren't put in the match, even though you didn't win it, you had such a performance where you deserved to be in that match. Bias, objectively, whatever, who cares? And you should have been in that match because the way that your career was peaking, like, that was going to be the moment, was you main eventing in Madison Square Garden, and you got it. And you got to win the world championship in Madison Square Garden.
Doesn't get much better than that. Not a much better fairy tale than that. But, it's one of those things where I thought I belonged in the main event for a long time. And I looked at Vegas as, this is my statement. This is my star-making performance. And, man, thank God that worked out. I would be so bummed out if it didn't. Woo!
You're in the
God.
Opening six man at Madison Square Garden.
You know, it's one of those things that you're
in the New Japan Battle Royal on the pre-show.
And it's funny. It's like last night again. Like, you know the implications of this. Like, no one talks about a good first pitch, but they always talk about all the bad ones, you know? Yeah. And you know the implications of that match in Vegas. It's like, this is 60 minutes. Like, you could shit the bed 30 minutes in, and now, like, woo, that's a nightmare. So both those, you're like so anticipated, and it's just such a relief. I mean, man, we after that 60-minute match in Vegas, me and Dalton and the other Kingdom boys, we like went to Old Vegas, and like usually, you know, Old Vegas will put me on a little bit of my guard. It's a little weird, but I was in such like a euphoric state that I had the biggest smile on my face. Like, everything was just like, everything was peachy, and I knew that. That night, I made myself undeniable for Madison Square Garden and, you know, eventually for the Ring of Honor world title.
You mentioned your travel adventures. When's the next travel, Taven?
So I've gotten a little bit of
I mean, you're the champ. I know your time is
Yeah. And, but, you know, we got the podcast, which I'm sure I'll find. Yep. You'll have a great spot for me to plug it. I know you, Jay Stu. But,
it's in my notes. Don't worry.
Of course. But like, I got so many other things going on. It kind of has been put on the back burner, and I was saying like, oh, I should do like this big catch up episode. But honestly, when I get some free time, I'll get back to it. In the meantime, you know, and Dalton just released one today. I'm not sure when people would be listening to this, but
it'll be up tonight.
All right. Well, you know, today, same Dalton, day. Yeah. And, you know, Planet Peacock is basically like a funnier version of Travel Taven. Like, Travel Taven's more educational with a little, you know, spice from us. And Planet Peacock's just the ridiculousness that we really get into on the road. And actually, just pulling one out of, you know, the trip in May that is just so ridiculous and so funny. So, you know, I'll pass over any viewers that are looking for the next Travel Taven to Dalton in the meantime, but we'll be back. You know what I mean? We'll be back.
So Lowell Sunday night, ringofhonorwrestling.com is where you want to get your tickets at the Lowell Memorial. auditorium, a building that I love. I grew up in that building.
Did you ever lose your smile there?
I was there that night, though.
Were you? Yeah. Oh, I think we've talked about this. Yeah. I always refer to it as like, oh, you know, the place where Shawn Michaels lost his smile. Everyone's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Dalton Castle lost his smile there once, too. He did. Couldn't work you. But, you know.
But he didn't do the right thing like Shawn did. He didn't drop the belt.
He didn't. You know? He didn't hand it over. He made it to a Jay Lethal match, and Jay Lethal won.
Unbelievable. Now Jay Lethal's
getting
another title shot.
So my prediction is you'll be walking in as champion there. There'll be a nice homecoming celebration for you.
It'll be nice.
In Lowell, Massachusetts, after you beat Jay Lethal and send him to the bottom of the line once again, because that's where he should be. But that match should be... I'm not going to go back. So have you enjoyed your venture into the world of a weekly podcast?
Yeah. I mean, it's
take a bump, Danny Picard.
But Danny does, you know, he hustles and he works his butt off. And, you know, I kind of come in and do what I'm doing right now with you, just kind of come in and start talking. I do, you know, I am in charge of the guests. So that's my project weekly when it comes to the show. But it's something for me that is almost therapeutic. And, you know, people... I personally don't think, like, with our wrestling characters showing the fact that I had strawberries on my pancakes for breakfast, and then after that I, you know, walked the dog for a second, and showing every single movement of my day really does any favors to the character that is Matt Taven. And I know, like, that's
kind of... Wait, you're a character?
To me, it's I mean, but the people that know me know that it's as real as it's probably anyone else's shtick. But it's just one of those things where it's like, I still need to have that, like, you know, media presence, and we live in a world where content is king. And man, I can talk. One day, you know, hopefully we'll be working together behind the mics, and I can stop, you know, destroying my body.
I could have afforded to pay you, I would have suggested this idea years ago, but I didn't have the budget.
You know, I'm sure one day we'll figure something out. We'll reunite and have a, you know, the most powerful podcast in the wrestling world, because there's not enough of them. But, you know, that's another thing, is that, like, when I was first got asked by Danny, it's like, oh, but there's so many wrestling podcasts. But we just have fun with it, man. You know, we talk Boston sports, life in general. I give some stories from the road every once in a while. We have some episodes just on stories alone. And then, you know, I bring in guys from Ring of Honor, but all over the wrestling world that, you know, a lot of guys are out there just dedicating their life to wrestling, and people probably don't know them as well as they think or should, and really don't give them, like, their just due. So I love, like, guys coming in and talking about their story and, like, how they got there. But I also love, like, just hearing guys' passions for wrestling. And Danny always asks, you know, like, what's your favorite wrestler? Which is really just a jumping off point of, like, how did you end up loving wrestling? And the passion that, you know, the guys in the business, and, like, fans think they have passion for the business. Imagine having so much passion that you'll dedicate your entire life to it. So it's, you know, we're super fans as wrestlers. That's how we got into it. We're humongous fans for the most part.
I was describing to somebody I was talking to on Sunday night in Melrose that I'm a fan with a media pass.
Mm. Which is a great way to look at it.
And that's just how I am. Yeah. And I don't deny that. I'm a fan of everything. And I'm blessed that somebody has decided to pay me to do sports media.
Which is the best way to look at it. And, like, we just recently had Ryan Waters, you know, the guy who is the assistant trainer at Spike Dudley School when me and Vinny were coming in. And his view on things of, like, now people want... Like, now fans want you to respect their opinion as, like, the performers in the ring is so detrimental to the sport. And his, like, I would love for people to go out there, like, his view on the fact that, like, wrestling is becoming so niche, it's kind of pushing away casual fans. And he, you know, does promotions locally, and he tells me, you know, like, the young kids or the dad that wants to bring four kids to the show, they go there and they don't know the lingo, and they don't, and like, the other really niche fans kind of look at them like, what are you doing here? And wrestling has gotten that feeling of like, I liked this band before they were big, before they were popular. And I think that that's like a really bad way to look at things, because we're not going to grow. And if you want more wrestling, if you want more variety, if you want anything, like, things have to grow. You know, guys can't just keep sacrificing themselves for nothing for years. So it's a weird way to look at wrestling. And I think you're... view of it is like, I'm a fan at heart. That's the number, like, that's what everyone in the crowd should go back to. It's like, sure, you might like something, you might hate something, but you're a fan at heart. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a fan of podcasts or movies, and whether I like it or whether I don't, like, it's the form of entertainment that I signed up for, you know. And I'll take the positives and the negatives with it. And it's like, not every movie I'm gonna be in love with. At the same time, it's not going to make me, like, it's not going to ruin my day if I see a movie that I don't think is great. You know, at the same time, I'll find things to enjoy. I talked about on the podcast, like, I'm a big horror movie guy. And that movie Us, like the Jordan Peele one that everyone's going crazy for, I was like, I didn't like it. Like, I didn't like the story, but I like Jordan, like the imagery that Jordan Peele does in his movies and stuff. So it's like, yeah, man, like, not everyone's going to be in a universal thought. At the same time, like, I want to be entertained some way, somehow. Like, that's why I signed up for it, to have fun. Like, that's the bottom line.
And if people want to doubt my fandom, look at my performance at NXT Brooklyn and,
oh, you
and
the Money star in the
Bank
show.
In Hartford.
It was crazy. I, like, texted you afterwards. I was like, look at you. You're, like, getting more TV time than anyone on the show.
And from my understanding... Most of the room was entertained by me, or at least people. How do I phrase this? People who I wanted to be entertained by it were entertained.
They were picking up what you were putting down. Well, the thing is, Jimmy, like, you're not the smallest guy in the world. You know, you stand out like a sore thumb with a bunch of short wrestling fans.
Oh, Matt, let me tell you, there isn't a meal that I've missed in the last 20 years. I love to eat.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about you're a good foot taller than, like, who was next to you? Spalding was next to you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Danielle was next to you.
Yeah, and so, like, you're a good foot taller than her. It's just like, oh, look at Jimmy, like, boom, right there on my screen.
Yeah, that was the funny thing when I created the GIF of me shooing away the Bailey pinfall over Charlotte on the Money in the Bank cash-in.
No, that was your girl. She lost right in front of your eyes.
And that was something that a lot of people noticed, is me being just a touch. I'm like 100 pounds overweight, but, you know.
That's not what I thought. I was like, oh, he did not like that. He did not like seeing Charlotte do the job there.
The best part is, and actually, there are people who caught it initially when it happened, but the waving the afui by me kind of overshadowed the fact that when Charlotte beat Becky, there's me in the background jumping up and down to the point where my belly fat is just everywhere.
See,
it's a visual that I don't think anybody really wants to remember.
This skated by me, and now you're going to make me go back and, like, just focus on it. You know what I mean? You got to always do the story like, I was looking fantastic, all right? I was stealing the show, looking great, looking like a chiseled Greek god.
Sounds no, like that a pressing was promo. Me in my 20s. No, it wasn't. All right. Now, let's see. We got the podcast plug. We got Travel Taven. We got Lowell Sunday night. We got Honor Club Saturday night, where you're going to whoop Jay Lethal's ass. We're going to celebrate in Lowell on Sunday, ringofhonorwrestling.com. Now, the good stuff. The real reason why you're here.
Oh, is this why I'm decked out in Celtics green?
Yes. Give me your thoughts on the Celtics offseason.
So, like... And this is very similar to the world, I feel like, of wrestling. Like, people are like, the Celtics offseason is a disaster. No, it's
a little
not.
Strong.
No, it's not. It's probably not exactly how they wanted things to go. And we talked. I wanted to trade Kyrie at the deadline.
So did I.
You know, because I thought
the Clippers called.
And I mean, I'm not sure what relationship is going on behind the scenes. So I don't know. Like, I'm not Danny. I'm not talking to Kyrie, and maybe he's not either. But it's one of those things where, like, I assume that things are one way where it looks like the writing's on the wall that he's leaving. Maybe they're getting different intel from the inside, but then in the end result, where you see that he ends up going maybe not to the team that everyone expected, but at least to the market that everyone expected him to go to, then you should probably have seen that writing on the wall as well. So I personally wanted to get Kyrie out of town at the deadline. Once that didn't happen, you probably made the best moves you possibly could have. You know what I mean? I understand, like, when people look at it and be like, Kemba's a max, Kyrie was a max. It's like, the NBA isn't one for one anymore. Like, we've hit this ceiling with the max where it's like, just potential all-stars, guys that have a chance to being an all-star, will get the max. You know
and
what
the,
I mean?
And the way that the max works is it's service time in the league, not talent mm-hmm. level.
And so, like, people get bent out of shape thinking, like, all this money we're spending for Kemba Walker to come in. It's like, that's the price for him. Like,
so do you want to write the difference in the cap floor to the league? Do you want another Amir Johnson, or do you want Kemba Walker?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to get the best lineup possible. You know, you're going to spend that money one way or the other. Like, use it. The only thing that I'm disappointed in is Al. You know, right. Al and Kemba in the pick and roll is like, ooh, that would have been nice. And I think Gordon Hayward, again, guys, and man, as I didn't have as anywhere of a serious injury as him, but I feel that pain of, like, I'm still today, like, you know, feel like I'm always, like, fighting back against that injury. Gordon Hayward's leg was pointing in the opposite direction, you know, like, give this guy. So we saw what happened with Paul George. It took him a year or two to get back, and now, you know, he's a 93 in 2K. But
Gordon Hayward had a second surgery that never gets talked about.
And so, like, you got to give this time for him to recover. Also, you basically have made it clear with guys like Kyrie and Marcus Morris being gone that this is Tatum and Brown's team. See what happens there.
This has to be Jason Tatum's team. It has to be. You have to take the first part of the season and say, Jason, you are our guy. You are the number one option on this team. Do what you can. And if you can't figure it out by December, we have Walker, we have Hayward, we have Jaylen Brown. That's what we got to do, because you're the future. Want the Supermax when you're up for it? Prove it to us.
Of course. And it's still crazy because, like, when you think about it, you know, Jordan didn't come out of college until he was a junior. And, like, Jaylen Brown's that age now, and we're expecting to, like, put the world on his shoulders. So it's a tough spot. But I think you'll see growth in Jaylen Brown and growth in Tatum, hopefully. God, please. My only big concern is that the bench is short. So it's like,
it's thin, it's young, it's energy.
You gotta
and I
hope.
Think that's kind of what Brad wants, is he had a bench of veterans and they didn't produce. So what does Brad know? He knows how to motivate kids.
Yeah, and you got to hope that you have some scoring out of that group. You know, you got to find, and to me, instantly, it's like, okay, maybe the starting lineup's going to be this, but maybe the time's going to be staggered between all those three wings, Jaylen, Hayward, and Tatum, throughout the game. You know, they'll probably finish together or whatever the case may be, but you give those guys different opportunities to be the number one scoring option with the bench, and, you know, that still could be a good recipe for success. It's just, Durant's going to be gone for next year, so you probably put yourself above the Nets.
You should be the 2 seed next year.
But are you better than Philadelphia and Milwaukee in the playoffs?
Milwaukee, you know? No. Philadelphia, yes.
That Al thing is still getting to me, because Al was so good playing Embiid that if Al's not there to really anchor that defense against Embiid, and in Cantor's not, you know, a defensive juggernaut by any means.
No, they have the French tickler to to play defense.
I mean, and like, it's going to be a fight with Philly. So it's like, you definitely have those two teams. Toronto obviously is a
they're
going to
rebuild.
Now.
They're going to sell some pieces, I think, if they can.
But the East, you know, you still have a chance of making it out of the East with this lineup. It's not out of the realm of possibilities. Long term, you're probably looking at like a 4 seed for a couple of years, which is,
unless Tatum and Brown,
unless, you know, they really blow our socks off,
superstars.
And, you know, you got to hope that maybe that it doesn't work out in Brooklyn when you got KD and Kyrie together, which, God, I hope. But it's just one of those things where you have that chance, But are you going to get stuck in almost, you know, NBA purgatory? Yeah. It's that four and below seed where you're not going to get a high draft pick and you're just going to be, you know, first and second round bops for a while. So it's
that was the whole
one.
Key to this Celtics rebuild is you had another team tanking for you so that you
that
could
picked in work
be competitive. Well, but it did because you have Tatum and Brown out of that Nets deal. Mm-hmm. You swung for the fences on Irving. You ignored, you thought, well, that's Cleveland, that's LeBron, he won't be that problem here. And for a year, Kyrie Irving wasn't, as far as we know. Then I think what happened was game seven, he chose a nose job in Miami over being here at the Garden. And I think that that was the point in time where he said, you know what, this isn't my team, I don't want to be here. And I think that's when he started his plan to go to the New York Knicks.
There are
Once he got a look at the New York Knicks franchise,
he said, no thanks.
I can't go here. Durant and I need to go to Brooklyn.
Yeah. And like, there are those stories that make you almost see Kyrie's side a tiny bit. You hear about, like, that trip to Miami where maybe some of the young players went out and then they have a shitty game the next night and Kyrie's pointing fingers. Then you hear the crazy stories of, like, you know, what is government to you and all that
control.
Stuff. And it, that makes you go, like, oh my God. So this egomaniac, he started looking around and being like, people don't respect me enough around here. And it's like, whoa, you're the star of the team. Like, this should be your team. Instead of maybe pouting, how about we lead? So it's
also the market, Matt. And I don't think enough people put into how much this means to people. Whereas there are players who can go and they can play in New Orleans, they can play in Phoenix, and they're great players. I always say that the Atlanta Hawks version of Antoine Walker, which was a double-double every night, is not what Antoine Walker actually is. But because he's in a market where it doesn't matter, and Antoine flourished in Boston, don't get me wrong, but there are players who go to markets where it doesn't matter and they excel.
Yeah.
And then they get to the bigger markets, and because it matters here, it matters. The Celtics' success matters to so many people, and they can't comprehend it. Because to them, it's just a game. It's just a source of income. Now, and I think that's how Kyrie felt is, I can score whenever I want. I can play as well as I want. And nobody can stop me, except in the playoffs against the Bucks. But
or Kemba tore him up pretty good. Yeah.
Well, you know
he
how you stop
like the rest of the
team.
Yeah,
exactly.
The rest
of the teams. And that would have made it easier because you're not an on-ball defender. And that's one of the flaws in Kyrie is that he thinks he has this natural ability where he can do anything. He can't defend. It seemingly in tough spots, he couldn't get off a shot when he needed to in the playoffs. But year two, I didn't feel like basketball was important to Kyrie. Mm. It was about Uncle Drew, it was about a shoe deal, it was about this, that, and the other thing. And basketball just wasn't, he's like, we can turn it on, we're good. I've done this act before.
My first thought, especially when you say like people care so much, and obviously I'm part of that.
We care too much, which God bless.
I'm a million and 10%. I mean, look at me, I'm wearing green from head to toe. But like, the New York market, I instantly think like, well, people care in New York. Now, does this almost, it immediately makes me go, is that almost more of a reason to go to Brooklyn though? Because that it's less pressure in Brooklyn than it is in, you know, in the Mecca. I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So I think the market's the same.
So
I
feel
Brooklyn
like if he was such a, like a kind of, I don't know. He was just very, how do I say it nicely? Prickly, towards like the media and anyone asking him a question. How is that going to be any different in New York?
It's not.
So, I mean, I don't know. Unless you see a change from Kyrie, that New York, that Nets team last year was like this young, fun bunch. And if he's going to have the same reaction to the New York media.
They're what the Celtics were 2 years ago.
Right. Exactly. So if this guy's going to come in and have the same, like, you know, Eeyore rain cloud over him when someone asks him a tough question after a tough loss, is that just going to have the same exact effect that it had here in Boston? Like, that team doesn't look, it definitely doesn't look better than last year's Boston team, especially with KD on the shelf. I don't know how he's going to get through a year if he doesn't change kind of his outlook on basketball or you know,
on
at
life.
Least the media.
On
life.
Life,
yeah. I mean,
there
I don't know the guy.
There are miserable people
so
in this
like,
world, right? They're usually on Twitter, but you know, in this case, this is a real live actual person who is miserable with his life. It seems.
You know what? It's so funny too. It's like Kevin Durant had a burner account. Like, we forget about that stuff. Like, sometimes, you know, we put sports stars in these, like, in this atmosphere that they're untouchable, and they're just regular humans like the rest of us. But you got to learn how to deal with just those stuff that you don't want to deal with. I'm sure I wouldn't want to be asked the same questions like Kyrie was all last year. But man, you knew that was part of the gig, you know, and you're one of the top guys in the NBA. You know how this goes. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to from afar, because again, you know that my feelings about Kyrie last year, I thought he was poison, but it'll be interesting from afar to see how that Nets team gels with Kyrie. I think that this like is a blue collar town, and like the Kemba and the Wings and, you know, Marcus Smart is kind of a more of a Boston feeling to this team. Again, my biggest, like, I constantly look at this lineup and go, oh, I wish Al was there.
I wish we had a big who could defend.
Yeah.
Like, and this leads me to this. I think Karl Anthony Towns is going to want out of Minnesota soon. And I tend to believe that Boston is on his list.
So what I was saying with this being a blue collar town, and I think, like, you know, and to bring it back to wrestling, it's a kind of that edge and sharpness that I have to my personality of like, I will stab anyone in the back to make it. And I think that's how kind of Bostonians are. Like, you know, you wait at a green light for 30 seconds and the guy behind you is MFing you and laying on the horn. Like, that's just like, get out of the way or, you know, get run over. And I think that that's really a mentality of the city that we like to see in our sports teams. I personally think that Karl Anthony Towns kind of comes off a little soft.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's a soft player. There was a story that I read recently where he's matured and he's a little bit tougher, but to me that irks as a media plant.
Yeah.
Because I don't watch every Timberwolves game, but I've seen enough and I've talked to enough people where
I just look at the record.
Right.
Talented team.
And I think this was on Black Sports Online. This is a story that I texted you when it happened.
Brutal,
I think Black Sports Online reported it. If not, I'm blaming them for reporting it because I'm not reporting
it. It's out there somewhere.
It's out there. Start Google it, kids. Google it. But the story was Jimmy Butler wanted Karl Anthony Towns to play defense, and Karl Anthony Towns wouldn't. So Jimmy Butler is like, oh, I'll show you effort, and chased after Karl Anthony Towns' girlfriend.
Wow.
And
cold-blooded.
And let's see. What's a politically way? Sealed the deal.
Yeah, he got it done.
And
he taught him.
And Karl Anthony Towns didn't put any more effort into it. And eventually, Karl Anthony Towns, from my understanding, wouldn't sign his new contract with the Wolves until Jimmy Butler was traded. And ownership told Karl Anthony Towns, don't worry, we'll trade him before the season. They signed Towns, and Thibodeau is like, oh no, I want them both. And it wasn't until Jimmy Butler pulled that stunt at practice where he took the third stringers and whooped ass.
Which is a great story.
Got traded to Philadelphia.
But like, Jimmy Butler is more of a guy that I see fitting in a city like Boston, you know, and like, I don't know. I've never played with him, but him and like Chris Paul have this stink on them that they don't get along with their teammates or whatever. But I kind of personally like that, like, if you're not trying, like, get out of the way. Again, like, I'm going to play every possession. I'm going to do everything it takes to win. And, like, that scrappiness I find in myself, like, nothing's been handed to me easy. So it's like, I'm going to scratch and claw to win. And, like, I see that in Jimmy Butler. I don't see that in Karl Anthony Towns. Is that going to change now that he's a little bit older? Maybe he's playing less Fortnite or whatever they were saying that he's up all night doing. I don't know. Maybe that'd be the case. But, like, personally, and even Al wasn't like this raw type leader, but like when it came time for him to step up and like get physical in the paint, you saw that happen. I don't know if Karl Anthony Towns, and that team's just a big, you had Wiggins, Butler, Towns. Like, how did that team never even sniff like getting out of the basement?
Yep.
It's crazy.
And Towns as the leader last year didn't make the playoffs.
Crazy.
So that's kind of a warning sign. But you know what? Maybe if he's in the right system, maybe if he's got players and a coach who is more who is more on the level of championship driven, maybe that helps.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll never write anyone off. But
I would like to hope so. One little nugget, because I always like throwing these things in there just to, you know, improve clicks. I was told over the weekend that Zion Williams is fat and out of shape.
I heard that.
Because he thought he was going to the Knicks and he wants nothing to do with New Orleans.
I don't understand.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I just don't understand. Like, I get it, it's a players league, especially in the NBA, but like, it's almost getting ruined by people like holding the league hostage. Oh, time and time again. It's to me, like, Zion Williams is a kid with the world right there. Like, I understand it's not New York City, but damn, I have more fun in New Orleans than I do in New York City.
I loved New Orleans when I went down there.
New Orleans is a great, Zion, you will have a fantastic time. Just go. But yeah, I did hear he's, like, you know, gained a bunch of weight or whatever.
Has no interest in playing for the Pelicans.
I'm sure that someone's going to have to talk to him, you know, probably an agent or something, and be like, listen, you know, you're there for you have your rookie deal. Like, and if you put up a stink now, it's probably not going to look good for you at this age and stuff. And what will probably end up happening is that New Orleans will put him on the injured list with some sort of mysterious toe injury. And then he'll come back a couple pounds lighter and hopefully have a little change of heart. But come on, Zion. The Pelicans aren't going to be a bad team.
No, like, they should be. They should, if they grow together well,
exactly.
They should be okay.
They'll be a long-term.
And JJ's a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's not a bad, I mean, it's tough being in the West and stuff, but like, it's not a bad gig. I don't know. Especially now with the amount of money that all these guys have, why be so concerned with where you are is weird to me. You know,
it doesn't make any sense
to
me.
Like,
You play your best wherever you're drafted. And then when you get to the point where you can choose where you go, that's when you do it.
And I honestly think,
but this is Adam Silver's fault, by the way, because he's the one who shortened off the contracts and wanted more active movement.
Yeah.
And for him to talk about, well, we got to back off from that. No. You implemented all these rules.
At the same time,
you had the cap jump a ridiculous amount so that Durant could go to Golden State, so that Evan Turner could get $17 million a year. Which I hope
that.
He gave half that contract to Stevens, because Stevens is what got it for him.
But I mean, like, it did work on this, that we haven't stopped talking about NBA rumors all summer
which
long.
Which is awesome.
Exactly. So I guess it worked out. You know, it was a good idea for Adam Silver. At the same time, I'm a personal, like, I like guys that stay with the same team forever. You know, obviously growing up here, you'd see the Birds and McHale's never leave, but like, even seeing Jordan on the Wizards, and to me, like, I can separate my mind as like, that's a different person. It still broke my heart a little bit. And I have this weird sense of pride of like, this is the team that drafted me. So maybe it's a microcosm of our society, is that guys are being told they're the next thing since sliced bread at such a young age that we believe it. And now, like, you know, he's just got handed millions of dollars and he's like, well, I'm not working out. I'm in New Orleans. It's like, my man, you still have to work. Like, you're not, you know, Will Chamberlain or like an all-time great yet. And I hope that that's what you're trying to do in the long run. Like, you're not, just because since you were 14 years old, everyone told you you were going to be the number one draft pick, doesn't mean like your job's done. It almost feels like, I always say, like, when I won at Madison Square, it felt like that's where I ride off into the sunset and like, that's the end of the story. And then all of a sudden, like, the next week I'm in Pittsburgh and Columbus and, you know, defending the title, and you're like, oh, damn it, the work just started. Like, I thought this is how it was, you know, now I can coast. But I don't get it, man. I think that as much as it's a good thing for the league to be talked about because there's so much movement, the players are, they're holding everyone hostage to the point of like, when is enough enough? So
a friend of ours always talks about process over outcome.
That's true. That is true. And what I do like with all the movement is now you're not seeing like so much super teams as much as like you got duos.
Duos are awesome.
I love that. You know, give me a Jordan and Pippen any day over, you know, the Heatles. I'm pretty pumped to see, especially that West. Damn, that's going to be crazy.
The NBA package is just going to be awesome this year.
Yeah, I mean, you got to buy 2K this year. It's a whole, you know, those Warriors were unstoppable on 2K for so long. Now things are evened out.
Kemba Walker, by the way, a 91. Kyrie Irving, a 90.
justice.
And of course, I think this...
Now,
this,
is that official? Because somewhere I saw Kemba being an 89.
One of my friends sent me a screen grab of Walker being a 91 and Irving being a 90.
I mean, I'll go with it.
So, let's I'll go with it too because it suits my setup line, which is the reason, of course, Kyrie is rated underneath Kemba is because his chemistry ranking is a zero.
And because, you know, Kemba doesn't need the double when they're playing each other.
Exactly. I think I've hit all the points that I wanted to. So Matt is going to be defending the world championship on Saturday night in New York. He's going to beat that Melvin J. Lethal.
Yes, yes, yes.
We're going to celebrate in Lowell, Massachusetts on Sunday night. It's a six-man. Matt, Vinny, TKO.
Also known as the Kingdom.
The Kingdom. There should be no conspiracy in Lowell. They're taking on three Melvins. Lethal's probably on that team. You'll beat him again back-to-back nights. You can get all this information at ringofhonorwrestling.com. Tickets, Honor Club, all that fun stuff. The world champion of Ring of Honor, Matt Taven. Day 101 is official. Day 381 for the real fans who are keeping score. Matt Taven, thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you. You know I love coming and seeing you. But I'm honestly really looking forward to Sunday with being, you know, exclusive to Ring of Honor. I don't get to wrestle in New England, and this is where I cut my teeth, and it is special to kind of come home and see some familiar faces that helped me along the way. And, you know, I wouldn't be anywhere without all the independent fans that helped me or what came out to watch Matt Taven when I was wrestling in the area. So it'll be nice to come back and have a little bit of a homecoming. And to see you there as well will always put a big smile on my face.
I will be front row.
Well, then
might have a little surprise for you at front row too.
Oh, well, now you leave me a clip. You know, you're a real pro. Leave it a cliffhanger. This guy knows what he's doing.
And if you want more weekly Matt Taven content, Take a Bump is the podcast he does with Danny Picard.
Danny, everyone asked me if that Boston accent's real. I was like,
oh, it's real.
No, it's as real as it gets.
It's real.
It's real. He almost tones it down for the podcast.
God bless him for it. Matt Taven, Ring of Honor champion. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Jay.